Next speaker is Anna Novak from Fraunhofer Institute, who's waiting here. Yes. And thank you, Jim, for allowing a little bit of time for questions as well.
Okay, so hello and welcome from my side. Today, after my slides appear on the screen, I would like to talk a bit again about JPEG 2000 and MXF in audiovisual archiving. And as you might know, we have worked together with several partners from the archives. This was mainly the Cinémathèque Royale de Belgique on a project called Edicine that was funded by the European Commission. And within this project, we developed an approach and JPEG 2000 profiles and specifications and processes for archiving digital cinema content, which means long-term preservation on the one hand side and access to the archived material on the other side. The Edicine project ended in July last year, but of course we did not stop to work on this very important topic. And what after a short introduction again to what we did in Edicine, I want to talk a little bit about how we continue in this field. So basically what we did in Edicine is we developed a system concept to use the JPEG 2000 image compression system to archive moving images. And basically this consists of three main parts. First, we have, of course, the ingest. Then, when the material is in the archive, we have to take care about it. Preservation, planning, administration, data management, migration planning is, of course, also an important keyword. And also very important for the archives is how to access the material that is stored in the archive. And here we try to take advantages from the digital technology and from the flexibility that digital technology gives us. So how does the approach work? Most important is the use of standardized formats, non-proprietary formats, that is, so that even, at least in theory, in the far future, people are able to develop software, if it does not exist, to be able to read and to interpret and to display again the images that have been stored in the files. So basically this means not to be dependent on single vendors and on their economic decisions if they want to support some kind of format or some software in the future, but to have more than one, several resources to access this. This can be commercial software solutions, but can of course also be open source software. We decided to use JPEG 2000 for image compression because on the one hand we felt that for the large resolutions and large amounts of data that exist in digital cinema images, compression will be necessary for long-term preservation without any quality loss. Usually you can reduce the amount of data to about a half of the original amount, and for these big images, even more compression would be needed to have suitable means of access to the images. For audio, compression is not so much an issue. The amount of data is relatively small compared to the images, so we leave these as uncompressed. But of course, we have to find some means to synchronize images and audio and to package everything together and in one bigger file, and we choose MXF, the material exchange format that is widely used in professional broadcast and TV production, to do this. And MXF can also carry metadata. And we have chosen this two-tier storage approach with two storage package, one for long-term preservation that we've called the Master Archive package, which uses the JPEG 2000 and mathematically lossless flavor. This means that if you compress, say, DBX images from a scanner, in this JPEG 2000 profile, and then you uncompress them again, you will get exactly the same bits as they were original in the DBX file. Problem is, as I mentioned, that the files are still very large, and for day-to-day access, we thought that it might be a good idea to have something like the digital viewing copy of the archived film. So we defined the intermediate access package, which loses lossy compression, so the amount of data is reduced to a higher grade, and this can be used in day-to-day life. So this is a graphical representation. On the left, we have the master archive package that is in long-term storage. This can be film, but can be a data tape, but can also be film, like described in the monolith approach we've just heard about. And then we have a second copy that can be created through by a conversion step from the master archive package that is on hard disks. And sorry, this is also JPEG 2000, so this might not be very useful for all applications, but we are able to use another conversion process to create different dissemination packages from this intermediate access package in various formats. So what we also did in this project was to work in standardization. As you see here, we have three new profiles introduced to JPEG 2000, two the scalable archive profiles for the access with the lossy compression, and one with a very high resolution limit and possibility of mathematically lossless compression for the long-term preservation. So this was an overview of what happened in the EDCINA project, what you already might have heard before. what we now do is joint activity of several European archives, namely the Cinémathèque Royale de Belgique, the National Audiovisual Archive in Finland, the Danish Film Institute, and the Imperial War Museum in London. And what we want to do is to bring the EDCINA concept to life in different environments, to try it out, to gain experience with the approaches we have designed there, with the software we have developed, and to identify the problems that arise in day-to-day work with these systems, and also identify the opportunities that may also arise, and to evaluate the processes. And there's a working name that someone has come up with, the FIAF Archival Transcoding Engine. I'm not sure if this will be the final name for the project or for the software solution, but we will see. So what do we want to do? What is the whole idea behind it? First, we want to digitize, scan, convert material into the JPEG 2000 archive format, and each of the participating archives has small collection or part of the collection that it wants to use in this first approach to gain the experience. So it's maybe not very wise to in the first place to get a complete collection, but just to start with a small piece and gain experience. And we want to have a compact solution that is able to carry out the tasks that are mentioned here on the slide. So basically to store, to handle, to manage the archive packages on different kinds of storage media, on hard disks, on data tapes, to do something about the migration problem, especially if new storage systems come up. Say, for example, now we have LTO5, and maybe someone still has material on LTO2 or LTO3 that should be migrated by now. So there has to be some kind of automated migration process. And quality control is also a very important point where one wants to make sure that the files are in their original state, that no bits have changed. This can be done by forward error correction mechanisms or by creating and verifying checksums. But it's also about verifying the structure of the files, that the MXF and the JPEG 2000 data streams are according to the standards that have been defined for each particular format. We also want, of course, have possibilities to search, browse, preview the archived material. Thank you very much. As described in the overall concept, we want to be able to create different end-user formats from the archive packages. And everything should be available in a compact and affordable system that is easy to use. And especially the last point is very important, because in the archive, there are maybe not so many techies active in operation of such systems, but archivists that might not be so involved in the IT world. So first, of course, we sat together and collected the requirements. What do the participating archives need? We now have a list of different source formats from film, video, files, etc. that should be supported. We have a list of important output formats. So I'll go a bit more into the details of the formats on the next few slides. We have to have quality control during ingest and in the archive. We want to have possibility to playback the archived material. So basically, this not only means to be able to convert the archive packages to some consumer playable format like H.264 or QuickTime or AVI, but to have a solution to directly open the MXF archive files and play them back on a PC. this solution has to have some kind of management for files on the disks. Can be tapes in a robot, in an automatic tape library, or tapes on the shelf. There has to be a database, of course, with metadata and a connection to existing catalogs. And what's also a very important point is that we have to define processes for all important tasks. So there has to be a guideline for ingest of different types of source material. If I have a Digibeta video cassette, for example, what do I have to do to this cassette to transform the content on this cassette into the archive package? I need to have processes to be able to create from an archive package, say a DCP or a DVD video image or a Blu-ray image, to be able to disseminate it. I have to have processes for the management of the archive and the data. What do I do with the tapes once they are written? What schedule do I have for checking and verifying the data? And if I go back again a few slides, back to this table, you see that the archive profiles are relatively open and do not have many restrictions. Of course, this is good because it's very flexible and suitable for a lot of different formats, but it would be a good idea to define certain sub-profiles, so I might call them, for different types of source media. So, for example, if you have this Digibeta cassette, you have to have some kind of guideline what the actual resolution that is stored in the JPEG 2000 file should be, the bit depth for the images, the color subsampling, the metadata that should be stored with this material, and we define sub-profiles for the categories of source media that have been listed by the participating archives. So coming to the details of the source formats, we want to start with these formats. For scanned film, we support DPX and TIFF images. We will be able to ingest digital cinema packages, encrypted and unencrypted packages. Of course, there's the issue with the key management that we have to take care of. We will have a possibility to ingest analog and digital tape-based SD and HD video formats. And this approach that we choose, the actual ingest will be most probably carried out by a standard video editing system. So we basically use a video recorder connected to an editing system like Avid or Final Cut create a file with this editing system and then take this file and convert it to the JPEG 2000 archive formats. One archive has a request to also be able to ingest and store to tape the SEMA-MXF files from the SEMA Solo system, because they have one in operation, and of course we will also be able to support other JPEG 2000 varieties. TCP is also JPEG 2000, but the software we use is quite flexible, and we can also read and convert JPEG 2000 from other sources. And there's also a request for several multimedia file formats like MPEG-2, H.264, AVI, QuickTime, but the details on these formats have yet to be defined. And what we first concentrate on is, of course, scanned film and the possibility to ingest digital and analog tape-based video formats together with audio and timecode and, of course, metadata. And the list of output formats is very similar. Of course, we have to have a possibility to output, especially from the long-term preservation format, uncompressed files in the highest quality level that can be used, for example, for restoration purposes or for subsequent color grading or creating high-quality distribution formats. The output of digital cinema packages is very important, and of course other formats for preview or for consumer use. And especially, in principle, all of these conversion and processing steps will be carried out automatically, and this is especially true for these output formats. So basically you can select in the system that you want to create a digital cinema package of a certain movie, hit a button, and the system works and sends you an email when the TCP is ready to be uploaded to the playout server. There are several other demands to the system. It, as I already said, has to be easy to use, even by non-techies. So we, on the one hand, we have to have an easy-to-use user interface. On the other hand, of course, very good documentation of the software and the processes that have to be carried out for the different tasks. So we will have a step-by-step listing of what to do, for example, to ingest a certain type of source media or to create a certain type of output format. And at some points, it's important to be able to adjust parameters, for example, regarding the aspect ratio, where you have to look at the image and find out what's the actual aspect ratio of the image, because it could contain black bars on top and bottom on the sides. And in some cases, it's also wish to be able to adjust the compression ratio of the JPEG 2000. For example, if you only want to create an access file, you do not need the lossless compression, but you can use the lossy compression and adjust the compression ratio according to the contents of the image. There's a request the possibility to burn in information, for example, the logo of the archive or time code or explanatory text information. And of course, everything has to be flexible because each archive has different requirements in detail. We have to be able to adjust the software to all of these requirements. So coming to the practical realization, how do we do it? Basically, first step, ingest from the list of source format I've mentioned into the archive format, put it into the storage space, and then access with a list of output formats. And we already have a lot of the components that are necessary. We are now in there's work in progress to integrate this to a complete solution. We rely on one hand, of course, on software that we have developed and continue to develop at Fraunhofer Institute, like our universal transcoding framework, which is capable of creating the JPEG 2000 archive files and to create the distribution formats. We have a software-based player that is was originally capable to playback digital cinema packages in real time on any standard PC that's powerful enough. And this player has been extended to have capabilities to also play back the JPEG 2000 archive formats. What's special about this player is that depending on the performance of the PC you use, you can either play back, if the PC is powerful enough, at the moment 2K images in real time, but if your PC is not powerful enough, you just select a lower resolution, which is also embedded in the JPEG 2000 file, and then you can still playback the archive file or the DCP in real time, but not in the maximum resolution. And this is often enough to have a short, quick preview at, about what's in the actual file, if the file contains what you expect, etc. Then we need solutions for the database and the catalog. Here we have very good experience with DSpace, which is open source software, which is very well known in the academic world. This has also been used by us in the EDCIN project. We've extended it to support streaming video preview and to be better suitable for the media archiving. And for the data management, we are currently evaluating a software called Bacula, which is an open source software that runs on various operating systems and which can be used to write data to data tapes like LTO and to read it back, and which also contains a catalog. And there's a separate tool which makes it possible to read back data from single tapes without the database that contains the inventory of your complete tape library, and which can be installed also on any system. As the operating system, we've chosen Linux, but basically the user won't come into contact with the operating system itself because we have our own graphical user interface for the transcoding system, and the data tape management as well as the database have a web-based user interface, or the data tape management is integrated into the database system. And so the user only has to have this graphical user interface for the transcoder and the web browser on his PC, and this can be remote controlled from more or less any office PC. And our EasyDCP player that is used for playing back the archive files runs on currently on Windows and macOS. And also regarding the hardware, this is a software-only system, so we use standard PC hardware. It is advisable to have a multiprocessor, multi-core server because there's a lot of computation to be done, and we will need computation power, but this is standard technology. We use inexpensive RAID arrays. We support LDO tape libraries, which are also not that expensive right now. And we think this is a good approach to start with a small collection, and which is also extensible and can be upgraded to higher demands, to more powerful systems. And as I've mentioned before, for the video sources, we use basically any editing system, just the output format, the file format that the editing system creates from the digital or analog video input, has to be one that is understood by the Universal Transcoding Framework. So yeah, a few screenshots. This is basically the user interface of our EasyDCP player. Looks like any standard media player software, and is similar in operation. And this is the user interface of our transcoding framework. I don't want to go into the details right now, but what you see here is small diagram of the steps of the image and audio processing that are done in the transcoding process. Coming to the conclusions, idea is to start with a small system that is modular and flexible and can grow with the archive's needs. What's important to gain experience for us and for the users, of course, and of course we want to share this experience and report to the public about the problems and the opportunities we found. Very important is the definition of sub-profiles. This is not a field where we are the only ones who have ideas. I was at the NAB show in Las Vegas 2 weeks ago, and I've talked to several people who are in a similar approach. And we, of course, want to share information and not invent something separately from other players in the industry and other users, other archives. So you're also invited to contact me, of course, if you have ideas or requirements in this area. And we want to collect information, educate users, archives, and ourselves, and build a knowledge base, especially for the participating archives, of course. But I think it's important that all archives have the possibility to access the basic knowledge we have gathered, and you will hear from this, I'm very sure. Of course, we are not done once this project is finished. There's a lot else to do. There are ideas around to even further automate this process of creating distribution packages, because there are some cases where, depending on the target format, the destination format, parameters have to be changed in the transcoding. We plan to work on approaches to automate this using metadata that is stored with the original information, and to have some kind of non-destructive way to embed, say, for example, different color grading possibilities for different destination formats and devices. Okay, thank you very much for the attention. Now, I'm not sure if we have much time for questions, but I'll be available now and, of course, also on break.
Just a moment.
The big advantage of JPEG 2000 is that you can take out different formats from the master file without converting the actual initial file. But still, in the beginning, you said you would make a master archive package and an intermediate access package. Why is that then?
Yes. The problem is that there's a very important difference between the lossless compression in JPEG 2000 and the lossy compression. And this difference is expressed by the wavelet transformation kernel that is used. So for the lossless compression, another kernel is used than for the lossy compression. And our goal when we developed the profiles for the axis was to be able to create a digital cinema package from the intermediate access format with as little conversion effort as possible. This means that for the access format, we have to use the 9.7 kernel, which does not support the lossless compression. So this is basically why we have those two relatively different packages. And of course, depending on the actual needs of an archive, it is not mandatory to have both packages. For example, if you have the long-term preservation on film, but you want to use the digital system to be able to allow your users to access the film in a very high quality level, you will only create the intermediate access package with a very high bitrate, which can be in quality well above the digital cinema package.
I just had a quick question. At the four installation sites, what is the size of the sample of each of their collections that you're taking on at each institution, either in terms of hours or file sizes?
I cannot give real details about this, so maybe Thomas can say something about this.
Basically, we're four very different archives, even though we have some commonalities, and I think we're delving more or less into it as we find that we're able to. Basically, we're sticking our foot in the water now, and if it works, we'll stick it deeper, and if it really works and the water is warm enough, then we'll hop in.
So maybe regarding the hardware system, we currently plan for hard disk storage space between 10 and 20 terabytes. And now, depending on the kind of material, if it's SD or HD, and what quality level, one can try to calculate a number of hours from it. But 10 to 20 terabytes on hard disks will be one number, and of course, in theory, the number of LTO tapes that can be stored on the shelf is unlimited.
Okay, thank you very much, Anna. And we very much appreciate our collaboration in this field. Okay.